Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
So Dad, I guess knowing how important the church is to you and to Mom, I imagine it was devastating for you to have to break this news to your children. Is that right?
Yes.
Can you share what it was like for you to have to do that?
Can I share what it was like for me to have to tell them that their mother and I were getting a divorce? Well, I can try. That's an easy question to answer. It was horrible. It was very, very unpleasant and very, very unsettling. And what was even more unpleasant and more unsettling was to try and give them some kind of an explanation as to why.
And you didn't feel like you had one, right?
No, I had one. I had an explanation. I knew what I had been told. Now, whether or not that was the real reason or was just what I was told to let me down easy, I don't know. But I know what I was told.
So in this situation, it was Mom who felt like there needed to be a change. Is that right, Mom?
That's right.
Okay. And what was it like for you? You must have been feeling a pretty heavy burden then, feeling maybe a lot of the responsibility, even though that may or may not, you know, be accurate or fair. You probably felt a lot of the responsibility. Is that right?
Oh, I did. It was a huge, huge decision that did not come lightly or easily. And, it was really hard. It was pretty much heartbreaking for me with the kids especially. So, yeah, that was hard.
And did you feel like, we talked about this a couple days ago, but did you feel like this was something you were guided or led or even inspired to do from your perspective?
I guess I'm going to say it felt confirmed. I think that's the best way to say it.
Much like your decision to get married in the first place. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
I remember that. When you told me, it was with the authority of the celestial room of the Mesa Temple, and that was where you had felt very strongly that this was what you needed to do, and that it's what the Lord wanted you to do, or at least the Lord had the support for you, and that created some huge dissonance issues for me. But in later discussions, you don't remember that having happened.
I don't remember it. I've never remembered it the way you have told me that I'd said it to you.
Yeah.
I've never remembered it that way. I know that I felt peace and confirmation, but it wasn't like I felt a bolt of lightning or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you told me as well. I remember.
So I imagine that some of you have thought about the difficulty of, we're all members of the church. We're all seeking to, you know, to tap into divine guidance. Yet in this case, it's pretty clear that Dad didn't receive the same inspiration as Mom did. And both of you received inspiration that the marriage was to be. Have any of you spent time trying to work through that? I'll start with Mom on that one.
The fact that we didn't have the same inspiration about it,
fact you're both believing members, and this isn't a loaded question because the spirit is complex, and this highlights a very difficult part of the LDS faith for me, and that's that how do you tell between emotion and the spirit? What do you do when one person receives one answer and somebody else receives another? But if you think about it, both of you felt inspired to get married by the spirit, And you, Mom, felt like you were being led to end the relationship while Dad wasn't getting those same feelings. How do you work through God and the Spirit's hand in reconciling that? Have you thought about that?
I don't think I've thought about that exactly, because, I guess I just accepted what I received, and I recognized it was not something that he was open to or willing to see. And I'm trying to keep this simple for tonight. So,
sure.
So that's just, I guess I kind of put it that way that, you know, like I believe that, that inspiration happens as you make, as you ask the questions and you're open to receive whatever the answers are. And if you don't want to know those answers, you're not going to get them.
Right.
But I also accept that people have different perceptions, and I want to say that too. So. Sure.
And Dad, how have you processed that apparent conundrum or paradox?
Well, there are actually two answers to that question. The first answer is that based on what I was told, I'm not so sure that Mom ever had the confirmation or answer that she thought she had at the beginning of the marriage. What I was told was that she'd never loved me. She married me because her parents told her that it would be the right thing for her to do, and, but that she'd never loved me, and that it had taken her this long to make the decision that she wasn't going to stay in a loveless marriage. And there's no need to go beyond that simple statement. So the first premise of both of us receiving confirmations, looking backwards, I question. However, the Spirit tells people and confirms things to people at different times in their lives based on information and based on things that are necessary at the time. But people change, they develop in different ways, and what is right for somebody to do at one point in their life is not necessarily the same, not right for them to do at all periods of their life. Scriptures are full of examples of that. A single one might be Nephi was commanded to kill Laban to obtain the place. That doesn't mean that he was a murderer for the rest of his life, but he was supposed to do something at a particular time that he was not supposed to do at any other time. I feel that it would be not inconsistent with my understanding of the operation of the Spirit for a couple such as Mom and I at the ages we were when we got married to believe that we were in love and to believe that it was the right thing for us to do to get married. And it was the right thing for us to do to get married at that time. But through the process of dying, because of directions I went or directions she went, that unity no longer existed. I think that's one of the reasons why the DNC talks about the ceiling being a potential ceiling, and that we're really not a forever family, really not sealed until the sealing from the Holy Spirit of promise occurs. And that doesn't happen simultaneous with the marriage ceremony. It happens over the period of the couple's lives and their actions and conduct. So that's how I processed it, that it was the right thing to do at the time. We have four beautiful children as a result of that union. Great memories and experiences, and some not so great and good. But it wasn't a total disaster, and it wasn't a total wrong thing. It just didn't work out.
Dad, were you pretty devastated at the time, and did you feel like a failure?
Well, yeah. How could you not feel a failure when the woman that I felt very privileged to be married to tells you that she doesn't love you and has never loved you. And despite the fact that she's had four children with you, she's never loved you. Yeah, it's kind of devastating. It causes you to question who and what you are and whether or not you've whether you amount to what you thought you amounted to. It's very devastating.
And Mom, I've said a thing or two to my wife in my day out of frustration or sadness. Do you look back today with the with that being a fair characterization of you having never loved Dad, or do you feel like maybe you didn't say those words, you said it in a different way, or that's just you were feeling sad or trying to break out at the time? Do you look on that history a little bit differently?
You know, I think it's very complicated. And to say that, I wouldn't say that now probably like that. I would say that I wanted to, and there were things that felt compelling, and I feel like that, like I say, I started out feeling pretty much intimidated, and I think there could have been more love grow.
Can I interject?
I'd be happy for you too. This is way heavier than I want it to be.
I mean, you and I had a conversation last summer about, you know, your whole leading up to marrying Dad, and, you know, now me being married and in a different situation than I was when the divorce happened, I could see things from a different perspective, maybe, you know, with a little more understanding and compassion. But I think maybe you're trying to be a little too politically correct, because even at that time you were saying that you still kind of felt that you never really loved Dad the way that you maybe should love a husband, or, you know, maybe you had expectations that I specifically remember you saying things like, you know, that you were taught that any worthy man and any worthy young woman would be able to make it work, you know.
That's
that,
right.
That you had kind of had those feelings, and I don't know.
Well, let me take the focus off the direct relationship and sort of ask a more abstract question. I think we would all agree that one of the things the church can do really well is families. I mean, I don't think there'd anybody who'd say that the Mormon church gets families wrong for the most part. So starting with that premise, and that's how I feel, I guess, Mom, would it be fair to say that the combination of getting married too early, the pressure to get married, the other dynamics of, you know, of callings and sort of the lifestyle that's expected can sometimes suck someone young in and propel them into a direction that maybe isn't right for them? And that might not even be a Mormon thing at all. That might just be a societal thing. It sounds like that might be how you would reflect upon what happened. Is that?
Yeah. And I think I was very much a pleaser at that time, wanting to please my parents, wanting to please Papa. You know, I really did want to.
And wanting to please God, you know, right? I mean, you thought this was something.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, you're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Melissa's right in that. That's what I had been taught. So even though I may not have had the feelings that I now have experienced and know how different that is, and I didn't know. And so anyway, I went forward. And I know that I was scared the 6 months we were engaged. I would call and say, I don't think this is going to work, and I'd cry, and then I got reassured it was going to be fine. And so I just went along.
Yeah. And I guess, Mom, from your perspective, it's not like you didn't try to make it work.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you just kind of reach a breaking point at some point then? I mean,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see that. I can totally see that, and that's just incredibly hard on both sides. So let me turn it a little bit now to the kids. Well, I come from a divorced family myself, and you know, it happened right when I was still in primary, and I can remember very distinctly the contrast between the emphasis on eternal families and me trying to come to grips with my eternal family dissolving. So let's start with Melissa this time. What was it like as a kid to process your framing of the gospel, the LDS church, with the dissolution of your parents' marriage and of your eternal family?
Yeah, like I said before, for me it was very much a surprise. I didn't see it coming. I, you know, I had a really hard time. I was young. I was in Young Women's. I think I was 14 or 15. And it was right around the time I was preparing to get my patriarchal blessing. And I remember going in really kind of nervous about it. But when the patriarch started off with the prayer, and, you know, of course, you get the copy later, it talked about being sent to a home of, you know, righteous parents and godly parents, and be thankful for their example and all that they've done for you, and, you know, those kinds of things. And it said a line specifically that you will serve them in due time. And, just, you know, my parents are great and I'm blessed because of their example and their sacrifice on my behalf. And I need to be thankful. And I can look back at that now and see it differently. But at the time when I read it, it gave me comfort in that I thought they were not going to get divorced. I felt that this was kind of like a sign or a way of comforting for me, something that I'd been struggling with, in a way of saying that, no, they're goodly parents. You were sent to them because of this union, because they have this special gift of the gospel, and you guys are chosen to be a family, to be together. And, it made me think that, oh, great, then they're not really going to get divorced. And when it did go ahead and happen, I was crushed. I didn't know what to think. That happened to other people's families. It didn't happen to my family. And being in the ward was really difficult for me. It had kind of already been a little bit of a rough road anyways, just with other issues that we had had and that I, you know, personally had had. Just being in that ward, it didn't feel very safe to me anymore. And I remember the one good thing that did come from it was my mom moved into a new ward, and I was able to find really good friends there. And not to say that everybody in the home ward was really bad either. I look back now and again can see things differently. But at that time, I just needed support. I just needed people to be my friend and not be judgmental or, you know, pity me. And unfortunately, I didn't feel that there were anyone who could really understand what I was going through and help me with that in that ward. I do remember, you know, I would go to girls camp with that ward, and I remember, singing "The Families Can Be Together Forever." And we would do little skits about your families being together and being reunited in heaven. And it just was so hard for me. I would just bawl. And the only thing that really got me through those times, I did feel that I developed my own testimony at that time. And really, it just kind of made me take the focus off of my parents and that family and focus on what I wanted my future family to be like. And for me, I just kind of had to let go. And of course, that took a long time, but just realized that there was nothing I could do about it. And I could be bitter about it forever, or I could move on and try not to make the same mistakes that I saw in my parents.
Right. Jeff, what was it like for you?
I had already made a bed at that point in time to where I was away from the church anyways. So I really didn't have I really don't have an experience one way or the other. As I had stated, you know, I was gone for the summer, came back, found out that that was what was going on. Shortly, you know, within the next year and a half or so, after I'd gotten back, I had found the gal who was my future wife, the mother of my 11-year-old son at this point. And we've been divorced now for a year, but we had ended up moving out together, and, you know, I was out, you know, looking for something else, not really having a strong faith in the church, but having a strong faith in Lord God Jesus Christ, you know. So,
and did you ever have a hard time reconciling the divorce with your spiritual worldview?
No, not at all. I mean, I think I've got, I see things a lot differently, than a lot of, members of the LDS faith.
How so?
Well, you know, and that's hard to answer that because, you know, everything that I've got, you know, moving forward, you know, is from when I was a child, you know, what I remember. And I can also see how skewed that view was as I was growing up in the first place. So, let's see here. How so? One big thing is, you know, I don't understand, you know, what the ceiling aspect means. My understanding of that was that, you know, the family was supposed to be together forever. And, you know, things that we've been talking about even here right now, I guess that doesn't mean that that's the case. If, you know, how did you put it earlier, Dad, that, you know, there has to be some sort of a confirmation after the sealing's taken place, even though, you know, 27 years down the road, we never got that, and so now the family's not sealed yet. I mean, I don't know. I just personally see a lot of inconsistencies that I just don't accept the explanations for that the Mormon Church gives. So,
but you still had to look at God and say, why is this happening, or... Had you disconnected at that point from being invested in your family status?
I don't understand the question. Did I feel a disconnect from being a member of the family?
No.
Now, did you blame God or wonder God, or did you just accept that it was, you know, mom's choice or dad's choice, or, you know, it did it seem like a God thing to you or just a human thing, I guess?
No, right? No. In fact, when I would hear mom saying how she'd prayed and she had felt that she got the confirmation through the Spirit that this is the right thing to do, I mean, honestly, I just felt that that was her, you know, finding a way to justify actions. I mean, honestly, and, you know, I don't think that there, I don't feel that the Lord had given any confirmation one way or the other that that was the case. But again, you know, that was my view on it. I also didn't, you know, hold, I mean, I wasn't happy about it, but I realized that there was nothing I could do about it. And so, you know, I had a choice at that point, either, you know, go with it and love them, or, you know, fight them and distance myself. And, you know, I was already doing enough bad on my own that, you know, I didn't want to be fighting about something that I had no control over one way or the other. And I love my mother and I love my father, and, you know, I was going to do what I could to make the best of it. And even when the next guy came in her life, yeah, I tried to, you know, be friendly and make that work the best I could, even though it was tough.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, Glenn, how about you? How did this affect your spiritual religious worldview?
Probably pretty significant. I mean, there were several things that were going on in my spiritual religious worldview at the time. I was in graduate school when the bulk of this was happening, and I was studying folklore, and so I was looking at the way that tradition influences people's lives and creates meaning. And so, you know, it kind of shows you the value of a folklore degree when my brother so articulately expressed his reaction to my mom, you know, saying that this was received by revelation, and going, oh, she's just using that as a way to justify, you know, that was the message that I was being taught in folklore as well, is that, you know, these stories that we have and create validation for our beliefs. And so I was studying this in an academic setting. I was looking at other cultures outside of Mormonism, and I was starting to look at Mormonism as, you know, being just one of other religious cultures. And so with this happening, it just made it more personal to me. And, you know, just looking at the way that religion, I mean, even listening to my dad a few minutes ago going into the scriptures as a way to explain, you know, what had happened, just seeing how we use these religious stories to justify and make sense of the world. So I started going from, a more literal interpretation of religion to a more figurative interpretation of religion. And so it was definitely key in that.
Sure.
And for me, one of my most painful times with all of this was during Missy's endowment, when we were all in the temple together except for Jeff, and just the realization that my mom's on one side, my dad's on the other side, and neither the twain shall meet, even though they're both there. And it was like almost complete, almost together in the temple where it's supposed to be. And you're supposed to go into the celestial room and have this marvelous communion experience as a family, and I just felt the lack of that, and it was really painful for me emotionally, and I didn't quite know how to express it in that sense.
So for you, it was sort of a blow to the early stages of your faith.
It was a burden that I wouldn't call it a blow, but I'd say it was a burden that I had to shoulder and I had to carry. And to hear that, like Jeff said, there were a lot of inconsistencies, and I started seeing the inconsistencies as well. And I love my dad and I love my mom, and hearing their sides of it, that they both felt that they had God on their side, and it would have been a lot easier if one of them would have left the church. It would have been so much easier, but they both stayed true to it. And, being raised with this binary worldview of there's either right or there's wrong, it was it was confusing. What does this mean? So, it was a burden, I wouldn't say it was devastating. By any means, I'm grateful that I had to struggle through those questions, and I'm happy with where I am as a result of it. But it wasn't fun. It wasn't anything I would have wished for at the time.
Sure. Let's start with Mom, and then we'll go to Dad. Let's talk a bit about how a ward and a stake can react to a divorced person in a good way and in a not so good way. Do you have stories or examples or anecdotes of some angels who were really there for you within the church as models for how we might treat others who are in a similar situation, and maybe some not so angels, some types of behaviors or ways that we should try and avoid acting when this strikes in our own units and wards and families?
Well, in the process of the decision making while I was still in the home ward, there was a lot at stake, I think, for the leaders to keep me in line. There was a lot of that going on, and it was very difficult. I made the choice to be respectful of the leaders, even if I didn't agree. I was going to try to be as respectful as I could. And so I did that, and I wasn't going to let that turn me away from the church, even though it was really, really hard. When I moved into a new ward subsequently, and then later on, I felt very accepted and very much a part of things. And honestly, I feel like a lot of that was that I chose to not see myself as a second-class citizen because I was single. And so I participated fully, and I didn't expect that somebody was going to treat me any different than they would anybody else. And I also think it's easier for women than men, because I think women will rally around women that are single. But I think men in the church that are single, I think it's much more difficult. At least that's my observation.
Sure. Mom, did you get your doctorate after the divorce?
Yes.
So you went back to school.
Well, I was in process. Yeah. I was in process of... It was actually, going to school was one of the ways I was trying to cope with still being married.
Sure.
I was hoping that would help me stay.
Well, an interesting side note, possibly. I always remember her going to school. I mean, all of my growing up years, I remember her being gone and at school. And at the time when I couldn't spiritually justify what was happening to my family, I blamed a lot of it on her schooling. And I just kind of thought she had some crazy ideas or met some people that, you know, were Satan's people, you know, trying to take her away and put ideas in her head. And
yes, of course.
I will confirm that thought and suspicion as well, although I didn't think that it was as much of people putting stuff in her mind as the fact that what she was filling her head with was psychobabble. Just to, again, justify actions and, you know.
Well, I've shared this with you before, Mom. I don't know if you remember the day, but I remember going to your office with you at ASU, and I can't remember specifics of if you guys were already officially divorced or if it was separated, but I remember going to your office and you had to leave for something. I just kind of like sat at your desk and kind of crawled up and I just started crying. I just felt so kind of creepy there and just sad and depressed. There just was not a good energy there. And maybe that was my own mind, you know, creating that so that I could have a place of blame or something. But it felt very real to me at the time.
Graduate programs can be very lonely. You were probably picking that up on that.
Yeah.
And Mom, you were just trying to find fulfillment and satisfaction and maybe, you know, cope. Is that kind of what?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was. I mean, I recognize that it isn't possible to demand that one person meet your needs. I mean, that's just not possible, that to expect that of a husband. And so I was trying to find ways that were appropriate to meet my needs and see if I could do it.
Right. Yeah. Okay, Dad, tell us your perspective on how ward members or family members can help or not help.
Well, we'll start with home teacher, I guess. We had a home teacher that lived down the street, been our home teacher for several years. I worked with him in a state calling. Mom worked with his wife in Relief Society. And when they separation occurred, and then all the way through the divorce, these people kept very close contact with me and were very supporting and loving and non-judgmental. The ward as a whole, as far as I was concerned, was supportive. I felt very ostracized is not the word, but left out, not because people were intentionally leaving me out, but that because the flow of the church, the mainstream of the church, is so focused on families that if you're not a family, you're kind of left out.
Sure. I had two or three experiences, interesting experiences. I had a single cousin who took me to a single adult dance, and I walked into that place, and it's the walking wounded story. I walked into that dance and I said, these people, these are the walking wounded. That was my first reaction. These people are the walking wounded. My second reaction was, and I'm one of them. I wasn't ready to be in that place. And I never went back to another singles dance. I went to church one Sunday and a couple came up to me and they said, oh, we're so glad to see you in church today. And I said, why? I mean, why today? Where else would you expect me to be? This is Sunday, and this is sacrament meeting. This is where I'm supposed to. Well, but, you know, you're getting divorced, and things are blah, blah, blah. And we just kind of figured maybe you'd, you know, not want to stay with the church. I thought, that's kind of silly. Where else would I go? You know, I had differing experiences as a single person, and I don't think the church deals real well with single people. I happen to presently be in a bishopric in a university ward, and the church is reaching out and trying to integrate on various levels single people and attend to their needs on a single person basis, as opposed to trying to attend to single people in a traditional family war. And so,
right. Okay.
Melissa and I were living in the family home, the two of us, for a year or so. Jeff and his wife moved in with us.
Well, she wasn't his wife yet.
No. For a better part of a year, Jeff.
Something like that.
While she was pregnant with your son, the son was actually born in, while they were living in the home. And I guess she stayed with us for another 3 or 4 months before you moved. So we had a kind of a family, but it wasn't a complete family. And it was, in some respects, I guess we could quote Dickens, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Minus the best part.
Well, it was, I think it was kind of the best of times in many respects, Missy, because you and I got very close.
I'll give you that.
And it was kind of the best of times as well, because we got close with Jeff and Tammy, at least as close to Tammy as Tammy let us get. And then there was Curtis, who came along, and, he was great. There were good things that were going on, but they weren't traditional things, and they weren't the best of things. So from a standpoint of, did people in the ward help me? Yeah, many of them tried to help a lot. Did people try to hurt or interfere? No, I don't remember that.
I'll just say that was absolutely my experience. The one thing you said about, well, two things. I had fantastic home teachers, but I got closer to my parents than I think I ever would have gotten if they had stayed together. And that, for me, was this bizarre, wonderful side benefit of divorce. Did Glenn and Jeff, did you experience something similar?
Yeah. For me, moving in with Dad, being able to live there, I guess kind of under a black cloud, I brought in my not wife, pregnant with my son, my girlfriend, living in my house, and not really a traditional Mormon setting.
But maybe for the record, we should state that Tammy was downstairs and you were upstairs, even though the damage had been done. Dad wouldn't allow it in his home.
Oh. We tried to have a semblance of what I thought was propriety under the circumstances.
Really? I don't remember that.
I don't remember you staying downstairs or upstairs, but I do remember trying to set that up.
Yeah, no, I just playing. At first, it wasn't. I wasn't getting as close with Mom. I mean, she had moved out. We were living at the house. She was in her, as we had called it, Barbie dream house. Is that what it was? Is that what it was, guys?
Yeah,
that's what it was called. Okay.
And and doing her thing, and we were. I was not. I guess. I don't think I was all that close to the family as a whole growing up in the first place. As Missy had stated earlier, my recollection of, my youth, I remember going on some excellent vacations and spending a lot of time. And I remember car rides. I remember going up to Canada and driving up there and back and lots of good stuff. But, with the daily grind, I remember that, Mom was at school pretty much all the time. I remember, being able to take off during assemblies and go home with my friends and ditch school and things like that. And I'd be able to do that because nobody was there. I remember that, when Dad would come home, he would engulf himself in scripture and, you know, and read and then watch a little Star Trek and do his ironing. And there wasn't a whole lot of
clean the pool.
Yeah, well, that was Saturdays, but I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of family interaction other than on a Monday night for family home evening. And even then, we wouldn't even be able to watch Ferris Bueller's.
Well, we watched part of it.
We went, yeah,
it got
the,
turned
like
off
the first 5 minutes. Yeah, so, yeah. So, no. But
sorry, you had such a deprived childhood.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know,
hey,
that
we left out some of the good parts.
I wanted to say that there was lots of good parts, but there was also a lot of, you know, I felt disconnect, and I didn't feel that I really got closer with my mother and my father until later on in life. And, you know, I don't know how all that would have played out as they would, if they would have stayed together, but I feel that I have a really good relationship with the both of them, even though I'm out here in California. Mom's there in Utah, dad's in Phoenix. So, I mean, it's tough, but I think we do a good job making it work, even with the distance. And I don't know.
So, Glenn, did you have anything to add on that question before we go to the next one?
I got less close from my mom as you know, from the divorce. I had been close with her, there was again a lot of anger, a lot of judgment on my part, and so we kind of fell out for a while. I got closer to my dad during the time that he was divorced. When he got remarried, it felt like a lot of that relationship that we built was just kind of gone. I don't know exactly why that happened, but I think when he was divorced, he needed me more, and when he got remarried, he didn't need that. And so that's been kind of hard as well. And over the last few years, I've gotten closer to my mom again, but things have been kind of strained with dad, I think, over the last couple of years, until maybe the last few months.
It's a bit of a roller coaster ride for you.
Yeah, you know, not really having the kind of balance that I'd like to have.
Gotcha. Well, one of the days I'll never forget is when I was a student at BYU, and I got the letter from my mom, I believe, telling me that the ceiling was canceled. Let's talk about that notion, and I'm just going to assume right off the bat, Jeff, that was not an issue for you at all, right?
I mean, the symbolism is big because I understand I think I have some understanding of what that means. But I think what it meant more to me was kind of a confirmation that, you know, me leaving the church was not the wrong move for me.
Right. Okay.
So, I don't know.
Let's step back. Mom or dad, who was the person who initiated that process of getting the ceiling canceled?
I was when I was sealed again. So I needed to do that. He was sealed prior to that, and that wasn't a requirement at that time to go through anything like that. Well, I can't remember. I don't think there was. And so because
you're
it's
correct,
different
it
for
wasn't.
Yeah, so the different for men and women. So when I was going to be sealed again, then I needed to have that sealing undone.
What was that? Can you just talk us through that process of annulling or canceling a sealing?
Actually, it was quite a. I had, so I'm told, a really amazing process with it because it didn't take very long for one thing, and it just is. They asked me to write a letter of my experience, and then we had to have letters. And I had been married for a brief time in between, and had to have a letter from him, even though there had been no ceiling there. And and then my bishop and stake president and that sort of thing, and they wrote in, and then within 2 weeks I had a response, and it was canceled.
Very quick.
I'd like really to fast. Tackle this.
Very quick and painless.
Yeah, and, pretty much.
And Papa, for you, before we come to Melissa, anything you'd add to that?
No.
Okay.
Dad, okay, was there Melissa? Even any little bit of spite in you that thought, even just for a second, yeah, I'm not going to sign it. I'm not going to.
No.
No. Okay.
No. No. My thought was that, all right, this didn't work out with your mother. Well, I didn't feel that there was any purpose in my trying to be vindictive towards her, and hopefully you kids have never heard me say anything malicious or bad about her. That never was a goal of mine or a thought of mine. If she could be remarried and sealed to someone that made her happy, great. Because I was remarried and sealed to somebody that made me happy. I didn't wish her any unhappiness. So no, there was never a thought in my mind about not signing or authoring a letter that would assist in her achieving a cancellation so that she could be sealed to her current husband.
And Dad, you didn't have to go through a special application process to get remarried. Is that right?
No, I did. The process for a man to be remarried in the temple is similar to the process for the cancellation of the sealing, except it stops short of the cancellation of the sealing. You still have to have a letter from your bishop and your stake president. You have to write a letter, and the spouse is invited to write a letter as well. So the process, as I understand it, is pretty much the same. The result is different. For a man, the result is that you get a letter from the first presidency that authorizes you to be sealed to the second spouse in the temple without the cancellation of the first sealing.
Oh.
For a woman, or to put it differently, man can be sealed to more than one woman at one time. Can't be civilly married to more than one woman at a time, but you can be sealed with the earlier marriage having been terminated through lawful divorce. But for a woman, she can't be sealed to more than one man at a time. And so for mom to be sealed to her current husband, the sealing between she and I had to be canceled. And so that's the difference, the result in this process. I achieved or received permission to be sealed to a second woman. She received a cancellation of the first sealing.
And Dad, if I understand your understanding of this, it's not really the sealing that was canceled, but it's the promise of sealing, right? That marriage ceremony is the promise of sealing, but the actual sealing happens later. So I would imagine that at the time that you were sealed to two women, you didn't really see it as being sealed to two women. You didn't have any thoughts of like a shared afterlife together. It was just more of a technicality,
no,
like the promise of sealing, but that first promise had already been broken, so it didn't really mean anything there.
You're absolutely correct. The temple marriage ceremony isn't effective as a sealing right that instant. It takes a long time, and unless get dirt at the end and do other things, you know, you're not going to get that sealing isn't going to get completed. And I never did feel after the first 20 or so years and as a result of the divorce that your mother and I were actually sealed in that ultimate sense. We had gone through the process. We had the potential, but it hadn't been realized. And so the cancellation of the sealing was the cancellation of the possibility.
Right. And Dad, this is sort of a tangent, but since we're on the topic and I'm just curious, knowing that you're kind of a devout believer, do you believe that in heaven there is plural marriage?
when I get there and find out, I'll try and let you know.
Okay, so for you, it's just a big question mark.
Yeah, I don't have any. I don't know. I can see examples in the scriptures where it's entirely possible. It certainly, apparently, has been the process at points in time in history. It's also been not the process and not accepted at other points in time in history. So,
I don't know. It's kind of a question mark.
I can give you the answer. My kids will laugh, but there is a scripture that I can direct you to that gives you the answer to that.
By laugh, you mean groan, right?
Alma. Yeah, groan. Alma chapter 37, verse 11.
Which says,
these mysteries are not yet made fully known unto me, therefore I shall forbear.
Okay.
I don't know.
But for you, it's possible that it's not a law in heaven then.
It's possible that it's not. It's possible that it is. Okay. I just don't know.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.